inside a single gram of material pulled from a specific blind pouch in a broiler chicken's digestive tract, you will actually find up to a trillion bacteria.
Yeah, it's a completely hyperdense microbial factory.
Right, harboring over 500 distinct bacterial phylotypes, which means it possesses a collective genetic repertoire that is like 40 to 50 times larger than the chicken's own genome.
It is staggering. And yet, modern agriculture has spent decades inadvertently feeding these birds diets that actively wage war against that very microbiome.
Which is wild to think about.
Right. We essentially engineered a biological crisis through our standard feeding practices, and that led to this heavy reliance on antibiotics just to suppress the resulting gut inflammation and pathogens.
But now that antimicrobial growth promoters are being systematically banned worldwide, the poultry industry is looking backward to solve the problem, right? By utilizing one of humanity's oldest food preservation techniques.
Exactly. We are looking at fermentation.
Well, welcome to another deep dive. Whether you are prepping for a meeting on agricultural tech, or you're just insanely curious about the hidden science behind your dinner, we are really glad you are here.
Yeah, today's topic is a fascinating one.
Today, our mission is to explore how the ancient biotechnology of fermentation is being deployed at an industrial scale to essentially pre-digest broiler feed. We're going to look at how this reduces our reliance on antibiotics, physically alters the architecture of the avian gut, and help save the planet by upcycling global agricultural waste.
And we are pulling all of our material today from a comprehensive 2026 review article. It's from the Australian Journal of Agricultural Veterinary and Animal Sciences, and it's titled Fermented Diets Influence Broiler Intestinal Microbiota.
Which is a heavy title, but a great paper.
It really is. This review is a massive synthesis of recent data. It strips away all the corporate marketing around agricultural probiotics and looks strictly at the molecular and physiological changes occurring within the bird. Specifically when you introduce fungal and bacterial fermentation into its feed supply.
Okay, let's unpack this. Before we can understand how fermented feed changes the game and neutralizes these agricultural problems, we first have to understand the baseline environment of a broiler chicken's gut.
Right. The anatomy is key here.
Because a chicken digests feed incredibly fast. From ingestion to excretion, food passes completely through the avian GI tract in roughly 3.5 hours.
Which is lightning fast. And that rapid transit time leaves a very narrow window for nutrient extraction.
Yeah.
However, there is a specialized anatomical exception to that speed.
Yeah.
And that's the ceca.
The blind pouches.
Exactly. These are two blind pouches located right at the junction where the small intestine meets the large intestine. Because they are blind pouches, food material doesn't just flow straight through them.
Right. The turnover rate there is exceptionally slow.
Very slow. It becomes a highly specialized fermentation chamber.
I like to think of it like a high-speed transit highway, but right in the middle, there is a giant, slow-moving rest stop. That's the ceca. And it's where all the microbes hang out and do the heavy lifting.
That is a perfect analogy. Oh. And the environmental conditions in that rest stop are meticulously constructed by the microbes themselves.
Wait, they build their own environment?
They do.
Wow.
See, when a chick first hatches, its gastrointestinal tract is entirely sterile. There is nothing in there.
Wow. Okay.
But immediately, early colonizers from the hatchery environment and the initial feed move in. Yeah. These are facultative anaerobes, meaning bacteria that can actually survive in the presence of oxygen, like certain strains of Enterococcus.
Right. So they get in there first because there's oxygen present?
Exactly. Yeah. And as they rapidly multiply, they consume whatever ambient oxygen is present in the gut.
Oh, I see. So they are basically burning up the oxygen supply to alter the atmosphere for the next wave of microbes?
Precisely. They dramatically lower the gut's redox potential. By reducing the oxidative environment, they create a highly negative, oxygen-free vacuum.
Which sets the stage.
Right. Because this specific chemical shift is biologically required for the enzymes of strict anaerobes to function. Once that redox potential drops, the strict anaerobes sweep in and completely take over.
And this happens fast, right?
Very fast. Okay. In just 15 to 22 days, this completely sterile environment transforms into a wildly complex, stable climax community heavily dominated by a bacterial phylum called Firmicutes.
Okay, so we've got a trillion bacteria packed into a single gram of cecal matter. How are they coordinating? I mean, they can't just be operating as isolated single cells in a chaotic soup, right?
No, not at all. They operate as a unified, synchronized tissue. The bacteria coordinate complex behaviors through a mechanism called quorum sensing.
hormone sensing. Okay, but how does a single-celled organism without a brain or a nervous system actually sense a quorum? Like, how do they know how many of them are in the pouch?
They use chemical signaling. It's really elegant. The bacteria constantly secrete specific signal molecules called autoinducers into their environment. When the bacterial population is low, these molecules just float away. But as the population grows denser in that confined cecal pouch, the concentration of these autoinducers rises.
So it's like a chemical gradient building up.
Exactly. And once that chemical gradient hits a specific threshold, it binds to receptor proteins inside the bacteria. This simultaneously triggers a massive shift in gene expression across the entire colony.
Wow. So they basically vote with chemicals, and when they hit a majority, they act as one.
Right. They use this threshold to collectively launch defenses. For example, they'll form dense physical biofilms over the chicken's mucosal layer.
They just take up all the microbial real estate, so pathogens literally have nowhere to attach.
Right.
I think the paper calls this competitive exclusion. But they don't just build walls, right? They actually go on the offensive.
Oh, absolutely. It is active chemical warfare. Strains like Lactobacillus salivarius actively synthesize and secrete bacteriocins.
Bacteriocins, what are those exactly?
They are targeted antimicrobial peptides. Basically, microbial assassins. They are deployed to take out specific bad actors like Salmonella and Campylobacter jejuni, while leaving the beneficial commensal bacteria completely unarmed.
That is so sophisticated.
It really is. And beyond the chemical warfare, the Climax community acts as a metabolic power plant. The commensal bacteria take the complex carbohydrates that escape the chicken's initial digestion, and they ferment them into short-chain fatty acids.
The SCFAs, which ones specifically?
Primarily butyric, acetic, and lactic acid. Pumping out this acid sharply drops the pH of the cecal environment. That creates an acidic force field that is incredibly hostile to invading pathogens.
I actually want to focus on butyric acid for a second because it is doing double duty here. It isn't just lowering the pH to kill pathogens. Butyric acid actually acts as a direct high-octane fuel source for the chicken's intestinal epithelial cells.
Yes, that's a crucial point.
It's like the microbes are paying rent by metabolically fueling the very host cells that house them.
It is a profound symbiosis. The host provides the anatomical fermentation chamber, and the bacteria provide defense and synthesized energy.
But there is a catch here, right? Because all this incredible synthesis, the short-chain fatty acids, the microbial proteins, the B vitamins, it all happens down in the ceca at the very end of the digestive line.
Right.
So the chicken's body misses the chance to absorb a huge percentage of it in the small intestine. It basically just gets excreted.
Which leads to a really fascinating evolutionary workaround, coprophagy.
Yeah, eating their own feces. If the birds are on a solid floor, they will consume it. Gross to us, but biologically brilliant.
Extremely efficient. Re-ingesting that material is a closed-loop biological strategy to reclaim those end-stage metabolites and vitamins that the microbial factory spent so much energy constructing.
Right. Well, here's where it gets really interesting. If the avian microbiome is already this sophisticated, I mean, it's armed with quorum sensing, targeted peptide assassins, and a lethal acidic environment, why does the modern poultry industry constantly struggle with devastating gut diseases?
It's a great question.
Like, why does necrotic enteritis regularly sweep through flocks if their internal defenses are so incredibly robust?
Because the failure is not in the microbiome. The failure stems from the modern agricultural diet itself.
The feed.
Exactly. Standard poultry feed relies heavily on raw soybean meal, whole cereals, and oil seeds. What's fascinating here is that plants have not evolved to be eaten voluntarily. They have evolved complex chemical defense mechanisms to deter herbivores.
Right, they fight back. The review refers to these as anti-nutritional factors, or ANFs. Let's look closely at two of the heavy hitters mentioned in the paper, tannins and phytic acid. How exactly are tannins disarming a chicken's digestion?
Tannins are polyphenolic compounds, and they have a remarkably high affinity for binding to proteins. So when a chicken eats standard feed, the tannins aggressively cross-link with the bird's own crucial digestive enzymes.
Specifically trypsin and amylase, right?
Yes. Trypsin is required to cleave dietary proteins into usable amino acids. And amylase is needed to break down complex carbohydrates. The tannins physically wrap up these enzymes, forming insoluble complexes. This completely neutralizes the bird's ability to digest its meal.
Wow. And then you have phytic acid, which acts as a chelator. It's a ring structure loaded with negatively charged phosphite groups, so it acts like a chemical magnet.
Exactly.
It pulls in positively charged dietary minerals, things like calcium, zinc, iron, and it binds them into hard, indigestible salts. So the bird is eating this incredibly nutrient-dense feed, but the nutrients are entirely locked away.
And it causes a cascading physiological disaster because the complex proteins and starches are not being broken down and absorbed in the small intestine. They accumulate.
It's just piling up in the gut.
Right. This creates a highly viscous, sticky sludge inside the intestine. This sludge drastically slows down intestinal motility and triggers severe tissue inflammation.
And that sluggish, inflamed, nutrient-rich environment just rolls out the red carpet for Clostridium perfringens.
Precisely. That is the pathogen responsible for necrotic enteritis.
So the sludge is basically food for the bad guys.
Exactly. The undigested sludge provides an unlimited food source for Clostridium. It allows it to rapidly multiply, overwhelm the commensal bacteria, and begin secreting toxins that literally necrotize or kill the intestinal tissue.
And for decades, the industry's blunt force solution to this was just to continuously dose the birds with antimicrobial growth promoters.
Right.
They used low-level antibiotics to artificially suppress the Clostridium that the raw feed was inadvertently feeding.
But with the global rise of antibiotic-resistant superbugs, those antimicrobial growth promoters are being heavily restricted or outright banned in many places.
Right, which puts us in a tough spot. We can't just stop feeding chickens, grains, and soybeans. I mean, that is the bedrock of global agriculture.
No, we can't.
And we can no longer rely on antibiotics to clean up the resulting gut sludge. So how do we neutralize the plant's chemical defenses without pharmaceutical drugs?
We use external predigestion.
Fermentation.
We introduce specialized microorganisms to the raw feed to dismantle the anti-nutritional factors long before the feed ever crosses the chicken's beak.
The review details the use of these highly controlled industrial-scale starter cultures. They use specific fungi like Aspergillus niger or robust bacteria like Bacillus amelaliquefaciens.
These particular microbes are selected because they operate as massive biological enzyme factories.
Okay, so
when inoculated into the raw feed under controlled moisture and temperature conditions, they synthesize specialized enzymes that the chicken simply cannot produce itself.
Like what?
Well, they secrete tannases, which systematically cleave the bonds of the tannin complexes that frees up the bird's trypsin and amylase.
Oh, nice.
And they secrete phytases, which strip the phosphate groups off the phytic acid, releasing all the trapped zinc, iron, and calcium back into a bioavailable form.
That's brilliant. But I want to push back on one of the applications mentioned in the review, though. It highlights how this fermentation process allows the industry to upcycle low-value agricultural waste.
Right, to hit the UN's Sustainable Development Goal 12.
Exactly. They talk about fermenting grape pomace from wineries, banana peels, dandelion extracts, and palm seed kernels. But biologically speaking, grape skins and banana peels are basically just water, structural fiber, and lignin.
True.
Aren't we just stuffing commercial broiler chickens with zero-calorie filler? Like, how does a bird extract enough energy to grow from a banana peel?
Well, if fed raw, it would absolutely be zero-calorie filler. A chicken's endogenous enzymes cannot break down rigid plant cell walls.
Right.
But the fermentation cultures, like Aspergillus niger, produce potent celluluses. These enzymes act like molecular crowbars.
Molecular crowbars. I like them.
They crack open the tough, lignocellulosic matrix of the plant cell walls. By breaking open that rigid external structure, the celluluses unlock the intracellular starches and soluble sugars that are trapped inside.
Ah.
So fermentation actually converts indigestible structural waste into readily available calories.
So what does this all mean? It's basically like hiring a microscopic sous chef to prep, cook, and detoxify the meal before serving it to the bird. And it's simultaneously cleaning up millions of tons of the agricultural industry's garbage.
Exactly. A sous chef that is actively multiplying within the feed as it works.
Mm.
By the time the feed is delivered to the bird, it is entirely saturated with live probiotics.
And those highly beneficial short-chain fatty acids we discussed earlier.
Right, because they're generated during that pre-digestion phase.
And when this pre-digested probiotic-loaded feed finally hits the chicken's gastrointestinal tract, the morphological changes are profound. The physical architecture of the intestine actually changes shape.
It does. It's really remarkable to see.
The interior of the small intestine is lined with microscopic finger-like projections called villi. And between the bases of these villi are valleys called crypts. The review shows that fermented diets significantly increase villus height and decrease crypt depth.
Yes. And that ratio between villus height and crypt depth is the ultimate biological metric for gut health.
Okay, break that down for us.
Well, taller villi equate to a massive increase in total mucosal surface area. That allows the bird to absorb the newly unlocked nutrients with incredible efficiency.
Right. More surface area means more absorption. I understand why taller villi are an advantage, but why is a shallower crypt depth considered a structural improvement?
Because the crypts are the cellular nurseries of the intestine. It is where new enterocytes are constantly generated before they migrate up the sides of the villi.
Okay.
Deep crypts indicate rapid, frantic cell turnover. It means the gut lining is constantly being damaged by inflammation, toxins, or physical abrasion from that viscous sludge we talked about.
Oh, wow.
It forces the bird to constantly regenerate its own tissue.
So deep crypts mean the bird is wasting a massive amount of metabolic energy just repairing its own damaged gut.
Exactly. A shallower crypt depth indicates a calm, stable intestinal environment. Because the bird is no longer repairing constant tissue damage, it can redirect all of that metabolic energy away from immune response and tissue regeneration.
And put it directly into muscle growth.
Precisely.
That's incredible. And along with the structural changes, the microbial taxonomy shifts dramatically. The review cites a study where including 17.9% fermented cottonseed meal in the diet massively increased the populations of beneficial lactobacilli in the cicada.
Yes, and there's another study that looked at fermented dandelion.
Right, I saw that.
Adding an incredibly small amount, just 0.5 grams per kilogram of feed, was enough to dramatically boost the Firmicutes populations while simultaneously reducing the abundance of Bacterodota.
And boosting Firmicutes is the primary goal, right? Since they are the specialized engines responsible for breaking down complex polysaccharides into the butyric acid that fuels the shallow crypts and tall villi.
Exactly. Furthermore, upcycling those waste products effectively suppresses pathogens. A 15% inclusion of fermented palm kernel cake caused a massive spike in lactic acid bacteria.
Which is good.
Very good. It completely crushed the populations of Enterobacteriaceae, which is the bacterial family that houses notorious pathogens like E. coli and Salmonella.
Man, it sounds like fermentation is an agricultural silver bullet. But I imagine it isn't quite that simple.
No, it's not. If we connect this to the bigger picture, precision is critical. The review highlights a study where feeding 10 grams per kilogram of fermented tomato pomace failed to significantly alter the microbiota at all.
Oh, really? So you can't just ferment random organic matter, feed it to a bird, and expect morphological miracles.
Definitely not. The specific bioactive compounds in the original plant material, like the unique polyphenols in grapeseed versus the specific fibers in tomato pomace, combined with the exact metabolic profile of the microbial starter culture, that's what dictates the outcome.
So it's highly specific.
Very. It requires highly specialized, targeted biological engineering, not just generalized rotting.
Right. Which brings us back to why this matters to you listening right now. Why should a consumer or an agricultural tech investor care about the crypt depth of a broiler chicken eating fermented palm seed kernels?
The ultimate question.
Because this research points directly toward the future architecture of our global food supply. We're staring down a timeline where global protein demands are skyrocketing, while our reliance on antibiotics must be phased out to prevent a human health crisis.
And this ancient biological mechanism allows us to thread that needle. It provides a blueprint for a circular economy. Millions of tons of biological waste, the grape skins, the palm kernels, the discarded bran are no longer rotting in landfills emitting methane.
Yeah.
Instead, they are molecularly unlocked and converted into safe, cheap, antibiotic-free protein.
It is an incredibly elegant biological intervention. But the review does leave us with one unexplored, slightly unsettling thread regarding the sheer adaptability of these microscopic ecosystems.
Yes, the genetic adaptability.
We talked earlier about how bacteria in the cicada use quorum sensing and chemical gradients to coordinate attacks, but they also engage in horizontal gene transfer. If they aren't breeding, how are these single-celled organisms transferring genetic traits?
Well, bacteria possess plasmids. These are small, circular, independent packets of DNA that carry specific genes, often genes dictating extreme survival traits or antibiotic resistance.
Okay.
Bacteria can eject these plasmids into their environment or actively absorb them from neighboring cells. Pathogenic bacteria are incredibly opportunistic scavengers. They can literally absorb the plasmids of dead commensal bacteria, integrating those foreign survival traits into their own genome.
Wow. So if we continue to hyper-engineer feeds, continuously flooding the avian gut with incredibly resilient, specialized super probiotics designed to survive acidic environments and secrete potent enzymes,
we run the theoretical risk of creating a massive genetic reservoir of advanced survival traits. The unanswered question in the literature is whether pathogens, through horizontal gene transfer, might eventually scavenge and steal the very genetic adaptations we are utilizing to suppress them.
So could we inadvertently supply the building blocks for an entirely new class of resilient pathogens?
It's a real possibility that needs more research.
It really reframes how we view technological progress. When we try to solve global crises, we naturally look for sterile, engineered, heavily controlled solutions. But the most powerful industrial-scale technology we currently have for securing our food supply isn't a laser or a drone. It is the chaotic, microscopic, and relentlessly evolving world of bacteria, something for you to chew on next time you sit down for dinner.